October 21st, 2015. Registration data access protocol. We are in Liffey meeting room 2, 12:30 to 13:40.
Hello, everyone. Apologies for the delay in starting the session. Some of us were in another meeting room. Apparently, there was a room change, and some of us didn't notice until the hour. So let's start. Could I ask if the lights could be lower in the front so we can see the slides? Has the recording started? Yes, thank you. Okay, this is Francisco Arias and Gustavo Lozano to my right. We both work in the technical services within the GED, the Global Domains Division at ICANN. And we are here to talk about the Registration Data Access Protocol implementation. So this is the agenda for today. And let's start with a bit of history, why we are here. So this is about replacing the WHOIS protocol, the also known as Port 43 protocol. This is three. So it's an old protocol that has been there since the 80s and has many issues. Among others is the lack of a standardized format. You can see there just three examples of how it varies depending on the registry that you have. Not just the way the fields are presented, but what fields are present. There is no support for internalization, and so there is no encoded define in the protocol. So depends on what client you're using, you may get what the server tried to send you or not, like in this case. And of course, it doesn't offer an opportunity for authenticating users. Therefore, you're unable to provide differentiated service. So for example, if you wanted to have one level of service that you will provide to anonymous users, those that do not have any authentication, which is the only option you have with port 43. And if you wanted to offer another set of information, potentially more information for users that register with you, there is no way to do this in port 43. The transport is insecure. There is no support for encrypting the transport. There is no bootstrapping mechanism. There is no way to know what server to query. There are many hacks that are implemented here and there, but there is no standardized ways to know where to query so that you can get the information you're looking for. And another thing that may be interested, for example, for the implementation of TQIS is there is a lack for standardized redirection or reference so that you can point to where the more detailed information, for example, the information on the registrar side, is present. There is no standard mechanism to say that in port 43. So we know that port 43 WHOIS has many issues, but how can we go about changing this? So a few years ago, in 2010, actually, there were a series of discussions among the community. Well, I should say that's the latest iteration of this. There has been, of course, many efforts previous that tried to fix this issue, but the latest incarnation of this started in 2010 with a series of discussions in ICANN meetings. And in September 2011, the ESAC, the Security Stability Advisory Committee, issued advice to ICANN recommending to replace the port 43 WHOIS. That advice was adopted by the board in the same year, and that led to the implementation of a roadmap developed by staff that was put public comment was also adopted. That roadmap contained a series of steps to get to the adoption of the replacement protocol, which is called Registration Data Access Protocol. The development of this protocol started in 2012 in the ITF, and at the same time, there were efforts to negotiate with legacy ETLDs, and some of them adopted the language in their agreement that requires them to implement RDAP once is standardized and once they are required to do it by ICANN. This similar provision is in the new ETLDs, so all the new ETLDs have this language. And also in the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement, they have similar language. With this, we have coverage in the majority of the GTLD space. The protocol was finalized by the ITF in last March. We now have a protocol that can request contractor parties in ICANN to implement. However, the way it was defined, the protocol is you can think of a menu of functionality that you can implement. It doesn't tell you which of the different sets of functionalities you implement. So for this, we started the task of drafting what we call the GTLD RDAP profile. That profile provides the description of what a set of functionality has to be implemented by the GTLD registries and registrars. The first draft of this profile was shared with the community just last September in the GTLD Tech mailing list, which is an open mailing list and anyone can join, GTLD-Tech at ICANN. So this is what the RDAP profile, which is, by the way, the main topic of the discussion in this session. We have the RFCs that define, as I mentioned before, the how you go about implementing certain functionality. And we have on the ICANN side the consensus policies that contractor parties are required to implement. For example, the latest one, the AWIP, Additional WHIS Information Policy. And we have, of course, the contracts that the registries or the registrars have with ICANN that define what are their obligations, in this case, in regards to what information they should show when they are queried. So we put all of this together, and we drafted the profile. So the profile is, you can think of mapping the contractual obligations from the contractor parties to RDAP. Yes, before moving into this, I should say the profile is mapping only the current requirements that are in the agreements. There are certainly more functionality available in RDAP, in the RDAP standard. However, the profile is not requiring the registries to implement any of these new functionality, for example, differentiated access or limiting what output should be shown in the WHIS output. It still has the same set of contractual requirements. If the changing the requirements of what registries or registrars have to do in regards to the output is something that is will be the subject of either a contract negotiation or a policy development process, which is outside of the scope of this effort to just get RDAP implemented so that we can start building on top of the base functionality of the protocol. This is how the transition looks like in a high level. So I should introduce here the term that is used in the registry and the registrar agreements. RDDS, this is the Registration Data Directory Services, that's how it's called. And this is referring to the collective of two services that are currently required in the contracts. First is the web-based RDDS. This is having a page that you can access, a web page that you can access in a web browser, and so that a common user can query for a domain name and get the information that they are looking for. And of course, there is WHIS, the port 43 that you access in a command line and get the information. So those are the current two services that are collectively referred as RDDS in the contract. So when we do the transition, we will be introducing a new service, the RDAP service, which is the what is shown in the middle of the slide. And in the future, at some point, which is one of the open items that need to be discussed with the community, we foresee that Port 43 Juiz should be retired. Of course, the question is when. I personally think there has to be some sort of overlap in which a period of time in which you have both RDAP and Port 43 working so that you give the users an opportunity to migrate. We're talking about a migration in an internet scale, so it will take some time. We're talking about, I would think, potentially months, maybe years, who knows. That's something that needs to be discussed and agreed. Now, getting back to the implementation of RDAP, this is the timeline, the current timeline. So at this point, we are, like I said, discussing the first draft with contracted parties and other interested members of the community in the GTLD Tech mailing list. If you're not part of it, I'll encourage you to join. The intention is to close that discussion early November, so in a couple of weeks, and update the draft profile with the feedback received, and with that generate a new version that we will put for formal public comment. So this is the second half of November. That public comment we envision it will run until early January, giving enough time for people to provide input. This will be, like I said, a formal public comment. The idea will be to have another updated version of the profile by the end of January 2016. That will be the final GTLD RDAP profile. Once we have that, we can go to the formalist of sending the legal notices to the contracted parties requiring the implementation of the RDAP service. The plan is to give the contracted parties 6 months so that on August 1st, we envision August 1st, 2016, we envision being the effect date when RDAP service has to be turned on by the contracted parties. And then you can see below that a couple of extra things that need to happen. When developing the draft RDAP profile, we identified a few issues, a few things that need to be developed as extensions in the RDAP protocol. Did I mention that the RDAP protocol is also extensible? Well, so you can add functionality to RDAP as need be. And so there are a couple fields that are missing in the RDAP base standard that are in the consensus policies or the contracts, the GTLD contracts. So we need to add those, I believe, three fields. I can't remember exactly. There are a couple fields that are missing, and there is already a proposal in the ITF to add those fields. There is also an issue with the status of the domain names. The RDAP base standard defines only so many statuses, and there is the latest policy, AWIP, which is very recent, requires registries to use exactly the same status as in EPP. So there is need to add some more status, but like I said, RDAP is extensible, so it's not that to add this, and there is already a proposal to add this missing status. There is also functionality that need to be added in regards to search. RDAP does support searches. However, it's missing some operands as required by the registry agreement for only certain registries, I should say. This is not base functionality that everyone has to implement. This is only applicable to certain GTLD registers that opted during the application phase to implement this searchable juiz. So only those that implemented this functionality. We think that functionality will be slightly more complicated to add to the RDAP, as in it will take more time. Not that it's not possible, but it will take more time to get general agreement with the within the technical community on how to go about this. So that's why we're putting it later in the future. But we don't think that's that's a showstopper to start with the implementation of RDAP. There is another thing that I should mention here. This there is a previous decision in the context of the implementation of the TQIS policy to bundle the implementation of RDAP with the TQIS policy. In the context of TQIS policy, for those of you that were not this morning in that session, there is a proposal to have three phases of implementation of the TQIS policy. The first two deal with what is called the consistent labeling and display. That is, how do you say, harmonizing the output in who is, sorry, I should say RDDS as a general term for all these services, harmonizing the output with what is required by the 2013 RAA. And it has two phases because there is the need to add functionality in EPP, EPP being the protocol by which registrars pass information to the registries. There is the need to add also an EPP extension to allow the pass for a couple of fields that are not currently passed by most registrars to registries. So there is also functionality that need to be added. That's why there are two phases for that. And there is a third phase in the TQIS policy that deals with the most complex case on the TQIS policy, which is to actually go through the three TLDs. The only three TLDs, the only 3G TLDs that are TIN, that's COMNET and JOBS. Those three we foresee that will take more time to do the migration from TIN to TIC. There are challenges that go beyond the technical dimension. And there is still not even a definitive timeline on when that will happen. So when I say here in this slide that we foresee implementation by GTLDs in August 2016, that's for everyone but JOBS, NET, and COM. So those will take more time before they are required to implement RDAP once all the other issues are sorted out. So as I mentioned before, there is here open questions, one of which I think we have the answer. We heard from the community in the previous meetings. Well, I guess I should start with the first one. So the first question is when to turn off port 43. We need to discuss that, and once we get to the questions and answers section, I will encourage to those that have an opinion that voice here. The second question is whether there should be still a requirement to offer web-based. This is a web page for, let's say, the common user to do queries once we transition to RDAP. And I think we already heard the community and also within ICANN when we were doing the analysis, we thought that is still something that has to be offered because RDAP is not was not designed to be focused on the end user. It's not something that is necessarily easily understandable by the end user. It's focused on being very structured, standardized, machine parsable, etc., but not focused on the end user. So for that, we need there is the need to still offer this web-based RDS service. But I should add that doing the transformation for such an structured output like RDAP is to a pretty HTML page is something that is not that is very simple. So that's why we think the second question is not really open now. I think that's still the requirement to offer web-based HTML is to remain, and that's what is reflected in the current draft of the TQIS policy. Like I said, TQIS policy implementation and RDAP are considered bundled, and that's where this definition is, and we are only saying that the only changes that need to be done now are on the web-based HTML output. So I think that's all I have on my side, and with this, I will pass the microphone to Gustavo to discuss the draft RDAP profile.
Okay. Yeah, so as Francisco was mentioning, if you go to the agreements right now, you will see that there is a term called RDDS. So when you see RDDS and ICANN requires RDAP, you will need to, RDDS at that point will cover who is port 43, web who is, and RDAP. So for example, if you go to a new ETLD agreement and you go to specification 10, you will notice that ICANN is monitoring RDDS. So that means that at that point in time, we are going to start monitoring not only port 43 and web-based WHOIS, but also RDAP. So this is just a note. So when you are reading the agreements and you see RDDS, that means port 43, web WHOIS, and RDAP also. Oh, next slide, please. And the section right now that we are in the slides are the main work items for registries and registrars. So what we are trying to identify on this part of the slides is what you need to do, or what are going to be the main work items that you need to do if you're a registry or a registrar. So, for example, the profile requires you to provide a service, the RDAP service under HTTPS. So right now you have all this load, in port 43, and that load is pretty simple to manage. It's basically a TCP connection. There is no encryption. Once we start requiring RDAP, all that traffic is going to be migrated to HTTPS. And if you notice, RDAP is basically an API, so you will need to follow all the best practices to manage an API under HTTPS that is going to be open to the public, right? So there are some challenges there, so you should be aware of those, and you should be considering this because in the future you're going to be required to support RDAP. Another thing that is interesting is we are requiring in the profile that the hostname that you use for RDAP should be validated using DNSSEC. Right now, a lot of registries in the new TLD world, they have whois.nic.tld, and that's not DNSSEC signed. So when you start working with RDAP, you are going to be required that hostname is signed with DNSSEC. So that's something else that you need to consider. This is also important for registries and also registrars. So right now, the profile requires you to provide the RDAP-based URL for the registrar. So that means that if you're a registry, you need to get that information from the registrar because you are going to be required to put the information in the RDAP response. And also, I should add that in the thick WHOIS policy, the registry will need to show the abuse contact for the registrar. So that means that in addition to this, you also need to collect the abuse contact information from the registrar. So basically, if you're a registry, you need to modify your systems, that handles the relationship with your registrar to also get these additional data points. Monitoring. So right now, ICANN in the new TLD space and for some legacy TLDs, we are monitoring the critical function services like EPP and RDDS and DNS. Those are provided within the service level requirements. So in the future, once RDAP is required by ICANN, we are going to monitor that your RDAP service is provided within these same service level requirements as RDDS. So this means that you should go to your internal processes and you should modify those internal processes to handle those kind of alerts. Because in the future, you are going to receive alerts. Hopefully not, but it's possible that you receive an alert for an RDAP issue. So your NOC and your IT team should be able to understand this and handle these kind of alerts. The monthly reports. So right now, registries, they are required to provide monthly, basically specify the number of queries that you receive in DNS or WHOIS. So we are going to require you to modify those monthly reports in order to add the fields that you are seeing in this slide. And the idea is to be able to identify the load that you're receiving on RDAP, right? And you can see the fields. Those are listed in the profile. And if you go and read the profile, you will see what is the definition for each field. So those were the main work items for a registry and a registrar once we require you to implement RDAP. So now we are going to start looking at the basic details or some extended details on the profile. So next slide, please. So as Francisco mentioned, RDAP, in RDAP, you can have extensions in order to extend the functionality. So the profile requires you that if you're going to provide extensions in your RDAP response, you should register those extensions within the IANA registry. And for registries, and this is very important, if you're going to provide an extension, you need to submit an RCEP ticket, and the extension basically needs to be approved by ICANN. If in your registry agreement you are providing searchable WHOIS or you are required to provide searchable whois, then in the case of AirDAP, you are going to be required to support AirDAP search queries. And in the future, once there is support for Boolean search in AirDAP, then you are also going to be required to support Boolean search in AirDAP. This is basically to normalize the functionality of searchable whois within AirDAP. Consistency, and this is very important. Possible that you have different databases for AirDAP and whois port 43 and whois web, I mean, whatever way you want to differentiate those databases. But the important thing is the information that you present on AirDAP, whois port 43 and web whois, should be consistent. So if I go to port 43 and the technical contact for a domain name is Gustavo, then that, and if I go to AirDAP, the technical contact should be Gustavo for that domain name. As with other registry services, AirDAP must be supported over IPv4 and IPv6. This is already a requirement for RDDS port 43. It's already a requirement for DNS. So AirDAP is also going to be required to be provided under both protocols. Regarding IDNs, so IDNs support is a must in the profile. So that means that if you receive a query that contains a U label, you need to support IDN lookup queries in AirDAP. And also, if you have variants or if you support variants, then you need to support variants in the AirDAP response. Or in other words, you need to provide a variants in the... So, ThickWhois policy, phase one and phase two. So the AirDAP profile already contains provisions to allow you to comply with ThickWhois policy. So, for example, the AirDAP profile allows the registries to provide the reseller information. Right now, for example, in WHOIS, if you want to provide the reseller information, you need to submit an AirSEP ticket, and then ICANN will approve you by that output in WHOIS. So in the case of AirDAP, it's not the case anymore. The reseller is there, so once the ThickWhois policy is in place, you can just put the reseller information in the AirDAP response, and that's going to be okay. Now, as part of the ThickWhois policy, the registry in the AirDAP output and the registrar, they need to provide a link to the WHOIS inaccuracy complaint form. So in once the WHOIS policy is in place, the registry will also need to provide this information. And the AirDAP already considers this in the output. As I was mentioning, as part of the WHOIS policy, the registry needs to provide the registrar abuse contact. And the profile already contains sections to allow you to provide this information in the response. And as part of the ThickWhois policy, the registry and the registrar both, they need to provide the registrar registration expiration date. And this is different from the registry expiration date of the domain name. So the profile already contains text there to allow the registries to provide this information. There are some registries that are not using host objects right now. They are using name servers as attribute, a domain name object. So the AirDAP profile contains text and sections to allow these registries or to guide these registries on how the response in that case should look like. So if you have a registry and you are using name servers as attributes of domain names, then you're already covering the profile. There are three TLDs right now that have some provisions for privacy in the WHOIS. Those are, well, I don't remember the exact TLDs, but there are three. Cat, name, and tell. So the AirDAP profile contains sections that allow them to continue providing this privacy data, but under AirDAP. So for those three TLDs, they're already covering the profile, and the text is there. Francisco was mentioning in WHOIS there is no bootstrapping mechanism. In the new ETLD world, the bootstrapping basically is based on the name that is standardized in the contract. So if you want to find the information, the server, the WHOIS server for a new ETLD, you just need to go to whois.nic.tld. But in the case of AirDAP, there is a bootstrapping mechanism, and registries are going to be required to use this bootstrapping mechanism. And you need populate your information in the bootstrap registry once the service is available under IPv4 and IPv6. That thing is the important section from the profile. And regarding the registrars and the response, and this is a question that we received also when we were developing the WHOIS clarification document, The registrar is only required to provide information for domain names in which the registrar is the sponsoring registrar. And if you are not the sponsoring registrar, you need to respond with a 404. We received some feedback of why we don't allow the registrars to provide a redirection to another registrar or other RDAP server in case that they know that they may have more information. But the thing is, as part of the profile, we are defining a mechanism in registries that could allow them to say, hey, I have this information, and this registrar may have other information. So if we don't have this provision, we are opening the protocol to loops, because, for example, a registrar may loop to another registrar, and then they may loop to the registry. So in order to not get into that potential issues, we are saying that basically if you don't have the information and you are the registrar, then you should respond with a 404. So these are the open issues that we identified with the RDAP protocol. These open issues are identified in the profile, and we are working on solving some of them. So let's see the first one. So as part of the AWIP policy, registries are required to provide the EPP status of the domain name in the WHOIS response. So in RDAP, the status in the base protocol, but not all the EPP status are on the base RDAP RSC protocol. So there is a draft by James Gould, and this draft, the idea is to create in the values registry, on the RDAP registry, is to create this missing status so that registries can still comply with the AWIP policy once RDAP is required. So if you go to WHOIS right now, you will see that at the end, there is a line that says last update WHOIS database. So there is no way in the RDAP-based protocol to signal when was the last time that the RDAP database was updated. So this was identified, and there is an internet draft that is trying to address this issue. So basically, we're trying to create a new then action that could be used by registries and registrars to say, hey, this is the last time that the RDAP database was updated. Next slide. Boolean search capabilities. So in searchable WHOIS right now, we have the... if you go to the registry agreement and you see that some registries are using searchable WHOIS, searchable WHOIS defines some Boolean search capabilities. Those are not present in RDAP right now. So there is, the community needs to develop a mechanism to support those kind of search queries in RDAP. There is at least one registry that right now defines the external host objects in a way that multiple external host objects may exist the same name server. So if you have ns.example.com, that name may match several objects within the database. RDAP supports name server lookups, and the registry agreement requires registries to provide support for name server lookups. But there is no way in RDAP to say, hey, this name server lookup matches several items in the database. So here the idea or the proposal is for the registry to add a link member, and in a link member specify that there is a relation of collection to other objects. I have not sent this idea to the mailing list, but that's one way that we could solve this issue. And as I mentioned before, the thick WHOIS policy requires the registry to provide the registrar expiration date. There is no support for this in the RDAP-based protocol, and there is already an internet draft that is trying to address this issue. So the profile is required. Registries and registrars, they need clear requirements on what they need to do regarding to RDAP. So that's the idea of the profile. The idea of the profile is to provide you with clear requirements that you can follow, and you can develop or implement your RDAP service. We have identified 5 issues around the base protocol that we need to solve in order to have complete functionality equivalent WHOIS. And there is still the open question on when we retire WHOIS port 43. So with this, I open the mic for questions.
Gustavo.
So thank you. Jim Galvin from Afilias. I have a comment. I'll respond to the question of when to retire port 43. And I would say immediately, I think there should just be a flag day and cutover. As soon as RDAP is turned on, turn off port 43. Really, the point that I'm getting at is I'm wondering what the rationale is for continuing the port 43. And I mean, strictly speaking, leave it on till you're told to turn it off, I suppose. There's no real issue there as far as that's concerned. But it would be nice to get rid of it as soon as possible. I really have one question that I wanted to ask. Could you expand a bit on why you would want an RCEP in order to include an EPP extension in the RDAP output?
Well, basically, we're trying to match what is in the agreement right now. So in WHOIS, if you want to provide more output or more information in WHOIS, you need to get approval from ICANN through an RCEP. So we're just trying to do the same on RDAP. There is no logic there. This is just following the agreement, basically.
Okay. Then the comment that I would offer is to go back and, you know, maybe possibly revisit that. I mean, let's have a little more discussion about that in perhaps a different forum or in a way. I mean, I make the observation that presumably if the data is there, you've already gone through an RCEP for whatever reason you need to on the input side. So whether or not I add it on the output side, you know, not clear to me why that would matter, especially since with RDAP being is nicely labeled. You know, I mean, you've got a nice tag value kind of stuff going on there. So, and the default is if you don't recognize something, you don't do anything with it. So when the client gets it, it's not like you're going to confuse anybody. There's an opportunity there to simplify requirements, and would like to see that thought about.
So just to clarify, Jim, what I think what Gustavo meant is that you need to have an RCEP registry service go through you have to go through the registry service evaluation process. In order, and as part of that, we'll cover both how do you get the information and how do you output. There is no need to have multiple RCEPs. It's just one. All that Gustavo is saying is if you are modifying your RACI services, as your contract already says, you have to go to the RCEP. That's all that he's saying.
Okay, so the thing to understand is what quality of changes to the RDAP or the extensions would remain. Are there limits, right? One of the problems you have in WHOIS now and the way that that output is done is it's all very precise, right? It's all very exact and because it's laid out precisely in the contracts and all of that. And I'm hoping that we're moving away from that a little bit with this new RDAP protocol. And in that context, I mean, there ought to be an opportunity here, some flexibility to make certain kinds of changes, I would hope, to the data that's in the RDAP that does not have to be reflected back as an RCEP and, in fact, require any kind of contractual change. And so that particular thing just jumps out at me as something it's just seems overly rigorous. I'm fine with the idea that, yes, if I'm doing an RCEP anyway and I'm doing a registry extension and as part of that whole specification, I'll probably include an indication of what's going to be displayed and what's not and the rules that go with that. But there should be some opportunity for flexibility on the other side for things that are unrelated to else that's new.
This is Francisco. I appreciate the comment. I just want to say that this is just what the contract says. Section 1.4 of Specification 4 says this is the minimum set of, I'm paraphrasing here, it says Specification 4, this is the minimum set of fields that you have to offer. If you want to offer more, you need to get approval from ICANN. That's all it says. And to your point on retiring WHOIS, I went and checked, as Gustavo mentioned, registries, utility registries are currently required to provide a report that includes the number of queries they receive, and for one of the two of the fields that are required are the number of queries they receive for web quiz and port 43. You might find interesting that all the new ETLDs, since they started reporting this in October 2013, when the first was delegated, first four were delegated, and until September this year, which is the last report we have received, are. It's 2% of the queries are the web-based quiz, and so 98% are under.
I don't know if Scott was in line first.
Well, I see.
Go ahead, Scott.
Scott Hollenbeck, VeriSign, and one of the co-authors of RDAP. I'm not going to comment so much on the bits that you have in the profile. I think there's a lot of technical detail there that reasonable engineers and policymakers will be able to find answers to. But I am concerned significantly about a couple of things that aren't in the profile. We undertook the work to develop RDAP specifically with the goal of addressing many of the issues with WHOIS. One of which you identified, you know, the issue of data privacy and internationalization. I'll leave internationalization off the table for now, but let's talk a little bit about data privacy. I was also a member of the GTLD Directory Service Expert Working Group that produced a final report recommending that some steps be taken to provide ways of implementing gated access. And we've got features in RDAP that will allow us to do that. As currently specified in agreements and in the profile, and remember, the agreements were written prior to the existence of these capabilities existing, we will perpetuate the issue that WHOIS has with all data, including PII, being available to anyone who wishes to ask. I would caution this community to give serious pause to perpetuating that model and instead consider an approach that allows us to address that particular deficiency using the client authentication capabilities that are available in RDAP. We have the ability to know who is asking, why they are asking, and you know any number of other features associated with the query, and return an appropriate response based on the authorization of the client to receive that information. So I'd like to throw that out discussion. Point number two, we use the IETF process to develop these protocol specifications, and we have a long-standing practice within the IETF of using internet draft documents and RFCs to document implementation profiles. I'd like to also encourage you to consider documenting this profile in an internet draft and using the IETF's consensus-building process to gain a measure of consensus on the approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. A quick answer to your questions. The first one, in regards to the adding more functionality to the RDAP profile, particular support for differentiated access. That's something that is available for individual registries to go to processes that already exist in ICANN. If they would like to change that part of their service, they can go through the, I'm not really sure, I'm not the expert here, but RCEP or the WHOIS, looking at Krista, she may remember the WHOIS policy for conflicts with local law or something like that. So there is a way that registries have, individual registries have to amend their agreements so they can offer this differentiated access as CAD, TEL, sure name, went through that process or was like that from the beginning. CAD and TEL, I believe they went through that process to modify their agreement to have this differentiated access. And certainly if there is appetite in the community to have this as a solution that everyone can offer, then the venue, the obvious venue will be through a policy development process within the GNSO. Regarding the other question, the other suggestion on having the profile documented as an IETF document, just want to explain why we did it the way we did it. We are going to write this as an internal draft and publish it within the IETF. The thing is, this document is lives in an interesting place. It's half technical and half legal. It's mapping the contractual requirements to a technical framework. So we thought that perhaps the IETF will not be the ideal place. And I certainly agree that the government has to have a community consensus on that that's the right thing to do. But I think the IETF is not the only place. ICANN is also a good place where we are used to get consensus on the community before we publish something and require people to implement. I'm not saying no, I'm only explaining what's the rationale that we're using, and I'm certainly hear what others think about this topic. Thank you.
My name is Andrew Sullivan, and I work for Dyn. So I want to follow up on that thread just a little bit more, because it seems to me that the discussion here is starting from the premise that the existing WHOIS contractual requirements are the right ones, and then what you want to do is re-implement that in RDAP. And from my point of view, that is exactly backwards. We did all the work that we did on RDAP precisely so that you had these features, so that you get rid of the stupid hacks that are in WHOIS today. It's a mess, and the reason it's a mess is because WHOIS didn't have these features. So we built the features so that you could do this, and now what we're going to do is re-implement WHOIS in RDAP, and in 5 years, we're going to be going through this again. It's just a mistake, and what we should do instead is use the features in the protocol in order to provide these things. In another, you know, with another professional hat on, I'm part of the IAB, but I'm not speaking for them right now. But the IAB has been pretty clear that privacy on the internet is a really important thing. And I'm really heartened you're saying, no, it's HTTPS all the time. excellent. But keep down that line and say, you know, stop publishing this stuff to anybody who comes. And now we get additional features that are already built in there, and they were built in precisely to solve this kind of problem. I really urge you strongly to look hard at the existing agreements and see what stuff could be done in RDAP according to the existing agreements, and have a plan to get away from the hacks that we've got in Whois, so that, you know, over the long term, we can actually implement a protocol that solves the real problems that people have. I'm not trying to say, you know, try to get things in or out of the Whois, and I'm not trying to relitigate the entire Whois discussion of the past 900 years here, but I am trying to say that we ought to have, you know, a serious appreciation of the new features we have, and let's have a plan to do a real registry data service. It'd be a great thing. Thank you.
Quick response on that, Andrew. You said you were... I hear you saying that we may not have the right provisions in the contract. I'm not saying whether we have them or not. It's not for me to say we have what we have. This is the digital space. There are contracts, and we have to follow that. So what we are saying is, what we are doing is just mapping what is there now. If we want to have this new functionality of differentiated access, then we need to go through the process we have here in ICANN. So the alternative that I see is, we either implement RDAP now, what we have in the profile, more or less, or we wait, who knows how much time,
right,
for once all these set of policy issues are sorted out, and then implement the right solution. I really am advocate for more for the good enough than the best. That's all we're trying to do here.
And I think what I'm trying to say is, I appreciate all that, and I am not trying to say, okay, let's not do this, not do anything while we wait for this. But what I do think is that, you know, this document can call out, here are a bunch of things that we're explicitly not doing, and here is how you would do it. This capability were there. Then you could take that to the policy side of the house and say, look, we've got this capability. It's already here. It's ready to go. And we've written the way to do it. And then you would just be able to turn it on if only the lawyers can agree to do it. But what will happen if you go with this platform? Yeah, but it's got like maintain this stuff and so on. I want those features to be part of the profile turned off, because what you said before is, well, the, you know, individual registries can go through this process in order to reduce this. That's the default privacy off. I want default privacy on. I recognize that there is a legal political problem here that is not part of what we should be discussing here. But I want this profile to have all of the facilities for the advanced use, so that, and my read of it is that it doesn't yet. Well, this is just a may. I want to know how do I signal, for instance? Okay, well, I have this or I don't. What are the rules for that? And it doesn't seem to me that that's complete there. I'm willing to send text if you want.
Sure, please send text. I think we have two more people in the line, and then, yes. Oh, Stuart was yours?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Hi, Stuart Clark. A question and a comment. Question regarding the bootstrapping process. From an implementation perspective, when is that the up and running from a implementation perspective? And from a comment side of things, the idea of freeing the reign of... For how extensions might be. The only sort of cautionary note I would have from a more of a user's perspective is, came a complete free-for-all, then some of the nice aspects of knowing how to use this example in a machine-readable way and what have you may become more blurred, because not necessarily knowing what different registries return and if there is any requirement for standardization and so on. There's probably a middle ground between the two approaches, but I'll just urge some caution on that.
So regarding the question on the bootstrap mechanisms, I must confess I don't remember if it's already working. Maybe it's other people here, but no. Do you know?
Sure. You know, there actually are some entries in the IANA registry right now, like for .br, .cn, and I think there's one other one. But I should note that while it is possible to bootstrap queries for domain names, it is currently impossible to bootstrap queries for entities. So if you are trying to, for example, start with an entity handle for, you know, a registrar or registrant identifier, we have no mechanism in the specifications or in the registry that allows a client to know where to send that search. That's a limitation of the protocol, a battle I lost in working group discussion, but it is what it is.
Thank you, Scott.
Jeff, Jeff Noakes with Symantec. A clarifying question. One of the requirements is that access to RDAP will be through HTTPS. Is the intention there that anybody who hits that web server is flipped into an SSL session, or is the intention that the registrar has to have an account management system that people log into, and that is what turns on the SSL?
Here's one.
Sorry?
The first option.
I am Alyssa Cooper. I'm one of the applications and real-time area directors in the IETF, which is the area where the RDAP protocol was specified. And the role of the area directors is to do kind of the final check at the end when we're standardizing something new in the IETF. And in the case of RDAP, I think as Scott can attest, as much as the working group wrestled with many of the tricky technical issues in its process, we also had a lengthy discussion around some of these differentiated access issues when the document finally came to the end of the process. So I wanted to speak a little bit to what Scott and Andrew were saying and really support what they had to say. I think the intention of everyone in specifying RDAP was that this differentiated access capability would be used and that client authentication could finally be leveraged as it is for many other kinds of sensitive transactions on the internet. So I think it would be an extreme shame to not leverage that. I fully appreciate that. Just because you specify something in a protocol doesn't mean that changing all the contracts associated with its use is as simple. Fully appreciate that. But I would say if it is the case that you go down the path of doing a kind of limited profile like this that doesn't require support for these features, that at the same time, the best practice profile also needs to be specified so that even if it's not contractually required, that everyone knows precisely if they're really going to be a good actor in this space, how it is that they're supposed to use client authentication and execute on the differentiated access capabilities. So I think that's the kind of the absolute minimum standard here. I would also say as to the question of an informational RFC, another option that's always open to people is even if you go about, having this policy document in ICANN, we can also do an informational RFC. And I think, again, that very often when we specify a protocol and we have implementers who come with implementation experience and want to kind of document that, the informational track in the IETF is a very good place for that. So it's not the case that it's an either or, is all I'm saying, is that even if you go along this path of having this process, that having an informational RFC where the folks who were part of the protocol development can also have input and review and provide that into the document, I think would be very beneficial for the whole community.
So regarding the second question on the draft and having input from technical experts, that's possible here. This is an open discussion. Anyone can participate. The GTLit mailing list that I mentioned is open to anyone. You don't have to be a contracted party to express your views there. And many people that are not parties do speak there, even people from the IETF that are not linked to contractor parties, as far as I know. So we do. We also have an open discussion here. This, and when we move to the next phase, which is public comment, it's also an open discussion. Anyone can join. Like I said, I'm not saying no. I'm just thinking on what is that we win by publishing as an informational RFC, where there is no formal IETF working group. What is exactly that we're winning? When we can have still consensus within the different parties, that not only the ones that have to implement it, but also anyone in the community also here.
Not really speaking to the openness of the process, just that it's in keeping with IETF procedure that we specify a protocol and then a bunch of people go out and actually use the protocol. They have some implementation experience with it, which is sort of like almost, not quite. And then it's nice to have the accompanying RFC that says, well, here's how we actually decided to use this thing. It's a very common way, outside of RDAP, outside of the applications area. We do that all the time. And so it just be a good idea is all I'm saying. Not because this process is different or better or worse than that one.
Okay, point taken. And regarding the first comment that you made, just want to clarify to see if I got what you were suggesting. You're saying it would be good to have a set of best practices on how to go about differentiated access. Is that what you were suggesting?
All I'm saying if you go down this path of specifying a profile, which is really being driven by how can we make this work within the existing constraints of the existing contracts, as opposed to what I assume people would think is the ideal case, which is if we didn't have these contracts and we could just, have a document that told the world what's the best way to implement this thing, those two would probably end up looking very different, or not very different. I hope not too different, but it sounds like somewhat different. And so what I would encourage you to think about is at the same time that you're doing the sort of minimal, this is how we can do it in the constraints of the existing system, also do this is the best practice. And if those are not the same, then having them both documented, I think, would be of great value. I would still prefer, I'm still with Andrew, that I'd rather not do this at all. But if you feel that you have to do it, and I'm not one to speak about this, is like way outside of my technical area. I am not a DNS person, and I know that the process is hairy, but I've never participated in it myself. But so if you feel that you have to go down this path, then all I'm saying is do both of those at the same time. Because what you don't want is people to think that this is the end of the line, right? And then nobody ever uses these new capabilities that we worked really hard to get.
Good point. And this is certainly not the end of the line. There is already an effort in the policy development side of ICANN, or in digital policy development side of ICANN in GNSO. I think it's called RDS. I can't remember the name, but there is a policy development process, which is a big effort that is building on a set of recommendations that came from the expert working group on directory services or something like that, in which Scott was a big part of that. So there is already a policy development effort going on ICANN to rethink on a wider scale what to do about directory services, how to change that drastically, not just evolution, which is what we're trying to do here, going slow to what with the tools that we have at hand. And I forgot the thing I was going to say.
No, I would just again think like, just talking about like support for client authentication may be viewed as an incremental step and not like this long-term evolution thing. So, what belongs in which bucket, I think, is a good question. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm not sure if it was Jim or Richard who was first.
Yeah, I'll just go. So we have a long list of technical questions that I'm probably better off sent to the GTLD mailing list. But the one question I did have is in the slide deck, and I was a little bit jet-lagged watching that slide deck, so I apologize about that. It was the three different phases of development. One is current state, and then short-term future and long-term future. And I think web-based Whois was present in all three of those. And I'm wondering if that's going to be true even for the long term, then what's the value of having these enhanced features in RDAP if the privacy features are only available through RDAP, but web-based Whois is still losing all this PII, what's the value of that?
That's a very good point. The RDS is a set of services as described in the register agreement, and 443 is the one that we are clear that we are trying to shoot down in favor of RDAP. But WebWhis, there is still the question on where that should be, and we think we have heard the community saying that should still be there because RDAP is not about the end users. Perhaps one thing that is missing is to say that the set of differentiated access, if a registry has, have to be mapped into WebWhis. The reality is the three GTLDs that have differentiated access, if memory serves, they are required to implement this only in the web-based WHOIS because that's the only place where they can implement it to begin with. But perhaps there is some clarity that is missing so that we say if you have differentiated access capabilities in RDAP, that has to be mapped into your web-based WHOIS service.
So I'm unclear what the distinction would be at that point. I mean,
So RDAP is not for the end users, it's JSON. If you look at that, most of the end users will probably be unable to understand it.
So the differentiation is just a last presentation layer, that's it? Okay.
Jim?
Jim Galvin from Afilius. So I want to just take a step back. I should first say thank you, Francisco and Gustavo. I really did appreciate the presentation. I think others did too in the room too. I think you guys did a very good job, and I like the way you highlight the changes and, in fact, work items for registries and registrars. So I just wanted to give you credit for that up front. I want to tie things together here and make hopefully a constructive suggestion for you to think about. I mean, I appreciate that the obvious thing to do is sort of roll out RDAP and do it the same way that Whois is done. I mean, that's just sort of what you do, right? I mean, it just seems very, very obvious. Problem is, it really does feel like a short-term solution. You know, I mean, it's sort of a short-term thing to do. And I think, obviously, you've heard the message here around here in a couple different ways. I mean, I asked about the RCEP. I asked about the differentiated access. You heard Andrew talk about privacy and Alyssa did too, to some extent. You know, we're down this path because we wanted something different and we were looking for the future. We really had a long-term goal here. And I think what's important is even if you believe that you can only go down a short-term solution, which is to present an RDAP service that looks exactly like Whois did, I would suggest to you that you should frame that presentation in the context of a much bigger picture and indicate you really are going to honor the long-term solution that was in progress here and what we were looking for. Okay, I mean, indicate what the next steps are going to be, the next three or four things and the next projects or initiatives are going to take place to solve those problems so that we can all, feel a little better about that we've done all of this work and this is not the end. So in the future, when you do that, I would encourage you to do that. And I'll end just by saying that, frankly, I'm really not convinced that your only opportunity here is to propose an RDAP service that looks just like Whois. I'm not a lawyer and I'm not even going to try to pretend to be one. And I'm sure you've done a thorough analysis on that. But I'd probably like to see a little more references so that we can share it with our internal counsel and lawyers to really examine whether or not we agree with you that we are obligated to stick with this particular model. It'd be nice to have that discussion somewhere, which brings up the observation that GTLD Tech is not really the right place to have all of this discussion. You know, there are parts of this discussion that need to happen elsewhere, and would ask, to do that too. So two things, always couch it in a bigger picture, frame it in a bigger picture. And two, would love to see the references, the analysis that went with why this is your only path and only solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. So regarding the big pictures, the future work, as I mentioned in a previous comment, there is already that place where you can have that discussion because it's policy work. And I apologize because I cannot remember the name. I think it's RDS, PDP that just started. So that's the place where you can have the discussions about what's the level of access that should be there and other deep discussions on the topic. Anyway, thanks for the other suggestion. Anyone else that would like to speak? Oh, yes, Eduardo.
We have two questions from remote participants. First one is Brian Mountfort from Google Registry. He asks, we have name servers as separate objects rather than as attributes of the domains. Are we still prohibited from including those fields? I don't have the profile in front of me, but I thought it had implied that we would include the information.
No, that's only for registries that use name servers as attributes, not for host objects.
And a second question from Jason Polis, no affiliation. Is there already a .js or other code freely available to render the JSON as a nice user-friendly web page?
There are some Firefox plugins that will pretty print JSON responses, but I think that's as good as it gets right now.
Okay, so we are 2 minutes before the hour. Krista, give me the pointer. It's called the PDP on Next Generation GTLD Registration Directory Services, RDS. So it is RDS. So if you're interested on the policy discussion on the how these directory services should look like beyond the current set of contractual requirements, contractual and policy requirements, that's the place to go in GNSO. So with this, I would like to close the session and thank you everyone for participating.